You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The provincial government will have to find almost $300 million more for public education next year. This is the amount necessary to maintain the current level of service offered in schools. The BC Liberals will present their budget at the beginning of March. Early signs are that funding to cover new costs will not be forthcoming, and that has left some districts projecting large deficits. A few are already discussing possible layoffs and school closures. Alicia Luke is a founding member of the BC Society for Public Education, and she's joined me by phone this morning to discuss possible cuts to public schools. Hello, Alicia.
Hello, Jane.
Now, why are the costs going up for public education?
Well, these are mostly costs that are actually controlled by the provincial government. Some of them are related to inflation. A big part of it is increases for teacher salaries and benefits that were negotiated at a provincial level, and that's predictable. But some of them are things that have, and also provincial MSP and WCB premiums, those go up, and we've all seen those go up. But there are also some special costs that government legislated, like the implementation of full-day kindergarten. So there is legislation that was brought in, and roughly half of the students in that age group will be able to attend full-day kindergarten. And there are significant costs, as you can imagine, associated with that. Another new cost is the new provincial carbon tax and the carbon offset charges. So every district now is obliged to offset their carbon footprint by purchasing carbon credits. In Vancouver, that could be, I've heard estimates of $300,000 to $700,000. So these are costs that actually, ironically, are mostly been controlled by the provincial government, but as yet will not be funded by the government.
So I just don't get that. How can they legislate new costs and then not fund them?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what advocates across BC are scratching their head about, and this is why you are now seeing these drastic announcements from districts about potential school closures. In Prince George, it's I think it's 14 potential school closures. As everyone probably knows, in the Vancouver district, they sent out potential layoff notices to 20% of staff, which was 800 teachers. That's why you're seeing these kinds of drastic actions. And you're also seeing now a real rise in public education advocacy across the province. Parents, teachers, citizens are standing up and demanding that there be full funding.
Now, excuse me, you mentioned Prince George. Are rural schools particularly in danger of having their funding cut?
Well, it really depends on what type of financial situation they were in before this happened. So, for example, if they had a lot left in a reserve, they might be able to shore up their operating budgets this year from that. And so it's really a patchwork. You don't really see a consistency yet. Certainly, what you're seeing in places that have what I would term temporary declining enrollment, they're looking at amalgamating schools, which leads to school closures. And that's what we would see in a place like Prince George, where the job market is particularly tight and families are leaving. That, you know, are some of our long-term projections, though, in some communities, that these are temporary. And once you've closed a school, it's very hard to reopen it. And so what happens later when those populations come back again? There was a really interesting op-ed that was published, though, is a concern that there'll be a greater divide in the type of education and the quality of education between urban and rural schools based on this economies of scale. Because urban communities have so many more kids and because funding is tied to each student, in areas where you have fewer students and farther between, are they going to be able to maintain a quality of education? Or are we going to see that kind of class divide happen around rural and urban communities? And that's a legitimate question to be asking, I think.
What kind of cuts are we facing here in the metropolitan area?
Well, the Vancouver School District is facing anywhere between 19 and, I believe now, 33 million are the projections. And the reason why that range is so great is because some of those items are unknown. Provincial government has not said yet whether it will, whether it's good for a facilities grant again. Last summer, they clawed back that facilities grant right across the province, and so the boards were left paying for things they expenses they had already incurred, were promised the money for, but then lost. We also don't know how the HST is going to play out. We don't actually know what the MSP premium increase is going to be. There's lots of unknowns, so that's the projection. So I believe the board chair, Patty Backus, has said they are looking at everything. There is no program, there's no cost that's not under the microscope right now.
What programs do you think are particularly vulnerable?
In my opinion, because of legislated class size and composition and the recent arbitration that we saw with the teachers, and the teachers being awarded days off to compensate for larger classes, no school board is going to want to incur that additional expense. So my projection is where we're going to see cuts is either in the closure of schools altogether or cuts to non-enrolling teachers. And the non-enrolling teachers are the teachers who don't lead a whole classroom. They provide the support for students who need extra support, and there are teacher librarians, for example. They are providing language support for English learners. They're providing support for children with learning disabilities. And so just because of the logistics of that, our most vulnerable students, poor students, kids who are coming in with some additional need that they have into the schools, are going to be the ones that suffer the most in yet another round of funding cuts.
Now, I haven't talked in the public school system, but I imagine that those are the very services that you need more of if you have increasing class sizes.
Yes, absolutely. And as we've seen, because those services become more and more limited, they get doled out, more and more frugally. The wait list for getting those services really decreases. And that's a really, really sad thing, because children need what they need when they need it. If you need extra support in grade 5, you need it in grade 5. You don't need it later on. Later on, it's too late. So what these types of funding cuts really mean is a lost opportunity to offer children what they need to succeed when they need it.
Do you think it'll mean we see fewer children graduating successfully from grade 12?
Well, that's an interesting question. No one's posed that question before. That's interesting. I think you can't continue to take money out of a system that's working, and indeed we do have a good education system compared to the world. We do have an excellent system. But there is a point where you simply cannot continue to take resources out of a working system and expect results, expect children to thrive. So
now in between the government and the teachers working in the schools, there's the school boards. Where do they stand on all this?
Well, school boards vary, as you can imagine. They're locally elected, and they reflect the will of the voters in those communities. We have boards that tend to be more activist and feel comfortable with greater advocacy directed to the provincial government, and there's other boards that don't feel that that's their role. They feel perhaps their role is more around caretaking. We have seen, though, out of the BC School Trustees Association, which represents all of our elected trustees, I think certainly evidenced by the letter that they signed last fall that was directed to the provincial government, a much greater comfort with telling the government that we cannot continue to take money out of this system. So that was a good sign for advocates. I think we all thought that was a great step in a good direction. I think there's a bit more braveness. Locally, we've seen some quite unprecedented things happen, like in the Chilcotin and Caribou. That school board has announced they will not table a compliance budget. They won't take the cuts out. They will table a deficit budget, which is actually technically against the law. All boards are required to bring in a balanced budget. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out, to see if other boards will follow suit and feel a bit more comfortable since another board is going forward to do that. So it'll be really interesting. Just as a footnote to that, during the worst years of the attack on public education in Ontario under Mike Harris, indeed, that is what happened. A number of boards, including the Ottawa School Board, eventually just refused to continue to make these cuts. And they were replaced by a trustee, which is what happens. And it was a kind of complicated story, but nevertheless, it revealed that even with the provincial trustees in place, those cuts were still going to happen, that really it was not an issue that school boards could control. This was a funding issue.
Now, I know you have a Facebook page. It's called Stop BC Education Cuts. What kind of response are you getting on that page?
It's been extraordinary, actually. There's been 1,000 new members in under a week, which is extraordinary. And I've been working very closely with Dawn Steele, very well-known public education advocate. She works with Moms on the Move, among other groups. And we have established, as a result of that Facebook group, we've moved off. People can still go there for sure. It's a good source of information and posting, but we've also created a website called StopEducationCuts.org, which we're trying to create a kind of clearinghouse for information throughout BC about what's happening district by district. There's a page for each district that would like to have information posted, and an exchange of ideas around advocacy strategies. There's a toolkit there as well, and a place to make announcements. You can actually sign up there and join a newsletter list to get information about, there is talk about a provincial day of action, for example. There's talk about some kinds of unified strategies. Certainly we're asking people to write to their MLAs. And so there's already some really good resources there.
So people should go along there if they want to figure out how to support you and how to get more information and that kind of thing.
Yes, and how to join their local communities as well. As I mentioned earlier, every community has a unique challenge that they're facing in these how these budget cuts are going to come down. And really, that grassroots advocacy is so important.
Well, thank you so much, Helicia, for talking to us this morning.
Well, thank you, Jane, for spending time on this issue. It's definitely worth following, especially as the media becomes more and more interested in other things.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Great. Thank you, Jane. Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Helicia Luke. She's a founding member of the BC Society for Public Education. You can find out more. I'll give you those sites again. You can go to stopeducationcuts.org, and the Facebook page is called Stop BC Education Cuts.